Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Our Big Show, the podcast where we follow Rutgers football and Big Ten football. And after a brief break, I am happy to be back on the air and talking Rutgers football, one of our first and recent edition of our offseason. And this particular show, we're going to focus on a spring practice recap and go over the 15 practices that the Rutgers football team put in, and as well talk about the spring game and any of the some of the interesting stories around both the program and the spring practice itself. Also, we're going to get a little bit into talking always recruiting. And as we know, one of my most popular sayings on this show is that college football is a year-round sport. I mean, it starts in August and season goes from September to December, and then you kind of roll into your bowl game and then right into the national signing period. And then you have spring practice and tons of camps and talk about the future of the next recruiting class. And then next thing you know, you're back at it. It's summertime and it repeats itself over. So it's always fun to chat college football. And tonight's show, I'm pretty excited. That's a pretty good lineup coming up. Sam Hellman from the Scout Network, scarletreport.com. And of course, tomorrow kicks off the NFL draft. So I'm pretty excited to have Rick of NFLDraftBible.com to come on and briefly talk about some of the potential NFL draftees that Rutgers may be putting out this year. And he's been on the show in the past. And, of course, this is crunch time for him. So I'm glad he's able to give us some time. And then Michael Foti, who's been on the show before, but this time he'll be coming on as a member of the Upstart, the ChopNation.com, a new site that's part of the 247sports.com. Of course, I've had J.C. Sherbert of 247 come on a few times in the past, too. So looking forward to doing that. So another interesting offseason, of course, in Rutgers, a lot of focus is on as a continue to compete in the Big Ten, coming off an 8-5 season, which surprised a lot of people outside of the program. But within that, it's a continued struggle to continue to build up, not just to compete, but to excel in the program and excel in the Big Ten. And well, one of the big storylines is always trying to keep top players in New Jersey. And I think that was a theme, if you watch the game on the Big Ten Network, the spring game that is, with some of the former players like Anthony Davis that were interviewed. And, almost to a man, Timothy Wright talked about keeping some of these top players. So this was another opportunity that the program was using to pitch itself to some of the top players in the state. But in terms of the spring practice itself, and of course, Rutgers, as we know, in football, whether it's college, NFL, anywhere you go, some of the biggest position probably is, of course, quarterback position. And this year they will be replacing a four-year player, who Gary Dover, who started pretty much over those 4 years. And the always difficult to replace a quarterback. Now, what's interesting this is that there's definitely a two-player competition with Chris Laviano and Hayden Redding. We got a glimpse in that game of both quarterbacks, but that was obviously one of the storylines. But, of course, there's much more and many more storylines. So without further ado, I'm going to welcome Sam onto the show. Sam, welcome back, and glad to have you on today.
Hey, Jerry. Thanks for having me back. Good to hear from you again.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be surreal how quickly, it just transitions from, the season is over, and then, of course, the intensity around National Signing Day and filling up your class, and it just seemed like a blur when spring practice started, and now, it's over, and we're kind of, recapping and then looking forward to other going on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just a man trying to make my way in the universe. But before you know it, it's training camp, it's Norfolk State, it's Penn State, and we start all over again.
Yes, I mean, I think that's one thing that, you know, you talk to people and you know, you look at that schedule that Rutgers puts out now, and it's definitely something to look forward to, you know, whether it's now, you know, they're announcing some of the night games they're going to be having. Of course, they'll be going into Penn State. That's going to be a night game on the Big Ten Network, and hosting Ohio State and Michigan State at night. And you know, just thinking again, it's still, you know, kind of hard to you know, believe that this is the type of schedule that they're going to be playing. But you know, here they are, and you know, now we get to see some of the product in the spring. But you know, I talked about, of course, the quarterback you know, position. Of course, that headlines it. But you know, kind of off the bat, I wanted to you know, ask you, you know, what were some of the players who kind of stuck out in your eye in this spring practice?
Well, I mean, to me, there's two kinds of players that I look at spring practice. I look at the guys that are obvious starters, but I want to see how seriously they take things. You have guys that there's no question they're going to start this year, but you still want to see how hard they play. You want to see them give it 100% in camp. And I saw that from some guys like Quentin Gauze. I thought he had a great camp at linebacker. He didn't need to practice once to keep that starting job, but he still showed up every day and worked his butt off. And I'd say the same thing when I look at the offensive line. I'd say the same thing about Keith Lumpkin, who played through some injuries and looked pretty good at left tackle. And I give J.J. Denman a heck of a lot of credit at right tackle, stepping in to replace Taj Alexander. He played every practice, and you can't say that about a lot of guys on the offensive line.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think in the spring game, they had 8 healthy linemen. So, you know, those who were watching the game, it did look a little funny where you had, you know, some red jerseys, some white jerseys, and then there was the black jerseys of the offensive linemen who were rotating on both teams as well as the quarterback. You know, offensive line, last year, Rutgers returned 5 starters, which I think, you know, sometimes was overlooked in the success that they had. You know, obviously there's consistency in that fact when you can bring back 5 starters. But now they're going to be replacing 3. You know, obviously Keith Lumpkin is a star at left tackle. But, you know, you're replacing it with players that have a lot of potential, but, of course, you know, the inexperience is there. You mentioned them in a right tackle. You know, Lumpkin's obviously penciled in. Yeah, Muller, where do you see the rest of the top 5 shaking out?
You know, it's a tough question because I'm not sure if top 5 is really the right phrase right now. Kyle Flood said a bunch of times, hey, we could play 6 or 7 guys. And, yeah, that's kind of a concern when you look at the offensive line. But at the same time, when you have so many young new guys that could play multiple positions, you know, who knows where they fit best? You might not see until you see it in a live game. So, I mean, to answer your question, I think Dorian Miller is a lock to start somewhere, probably replacing Caleb Johnson at left guard. And then center and right guard, we'll see how quickly Chris Muller gets healthy. Derek Nelson was okay at the center in spring. He could have been better. Tariq Cole and Jaquise Webb both played very well in spring, but are they ready to start after really, you know, less than a year in the program? I don't know. If you had to ask me, I would probably say Chris Muller and Derek Nelson round out that 5-man rotation. But really, there's a lot of reps to be won in training camp.
Now, you know, one thing that is, you know, a luxury to have, and, you know, is at the skill position, Rutgers looks to have, you know, pretty good depth at both the running back and wide receiver position. And, you know, one player I wanted to ask you about, you know, we heard from numerous publications and boards, and obviously he kind of cemented his good spring season with a nice spring game in Carlton Tagliadosi, who, you know, kind of stepped up and took charge of an opportunity. Now, one player, you know, I guess we didn't hit too much about, but Andre Patton, who finished off strong at the end of last season, you know, is he still penciled in as that number 2, or is Agudosi pushing him, or really Agudosi kind of set himself up as a solid number 3?
It's a good question, Jerry, and don't forget Janarian Grant, because when he's healthy, who knows where he fits. I mean, he might be a slot guy, he might be a lot more, but Patton, I think he was inconsistent in spring. I would say he was a little disappointing at times, especially when you look at how he finished last season. I'd like to see him be more consistent, But you could say the same thing about Carl Nagodosi because, yeah, he had a great spring. He's had great practices before, and it didn't translate to the field. Right now, Carlton's playing the X receiver spot behind Leonte Carew. I don't know if that's going to change. I'd like to see him work at the Z where Patton's playing right now, but I would still say that Agudosi has something more to prove before he jumps into that main rotation with Grant, Patton, Carew, and maybe even John Simmons.
Right. I mean, you mentioned Simmons, who's clearly showed himself to be an option, you know, sure-handed player that will definitely get reps in third down. And, you know, when you throw in, you know, Grant, I mean, you're looking at five wide receivers. And don't forget there's experience in Luhan Peel, who's coming back. So they seem to be, you know, have at least in terms of numbers, some depth at that position with the star and being Carew. Now, of course, the running back position, Paul James, who was, you know, not playing, of course, for his injury. And we had a good ending of the season, again, by the two freshman running backs in Josh Hicks and Robin Martin. I thought Hicks looked, you know, pretty good again in the spring game. Then you have other guys. I mean, in Des Peoples and Goodwin, I think all five of those in their career run for over 100 yards in a game, which is pretty impressive. Is that pretty much the pecking order? And good question, does James assume the starting role, or do you think he actually really has to fight it out with Hicks and Martin to get that role?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a great question. Again, I look at how Kyle Flood thinks, and I would guess that he would go with the experienced guy that he trusts in Paul James, but who knows where James truly is in his recovery in terms of if he's ready for camp, if he's proven enough by the first game. Do you want to risk bringing him back too early and playing him in a 1AA game that doesn't matter? It's a good question, but I look at him in that first three with Martin and Hicks where they'll look for the hot hand. But, man, I'll tell you, that's a pretty brutal position to try and earn playing time for Rutgers right now because you've got, like you said, five different guys with 100-yard games to their name, 100-yard games to their name, and behind that, you got Charles Snorway coming in as a true freshman who had something like 50 touchdowns as a senior.
Right. I mean, he had that speed factor as well. So, but again, like we saw last year, you know, with obviously James going down, Peoples ended up finishing injured. And it's a position that in a physical Big Ten, it gets banged up a lot. So, you know, I think you kind of want to make sure that you have your depth set up before you even entertain, you know, potentially moving guys or anything like that in that nature. Now, to me, it looked like Martin put on some weight. Even Hicks looked a lot solid. I mean, you see that a lot with first-year players in that first off season in the weight room, in the college weight room. You know, besides those two I mentioned, any other guys who you saw that really, like, transformed their bodies, you know, in any position in the off season?
First guy that comes to mind for me would be Tariq Cole, redshirt freshman offensive lineman from New York. He's one of those guys that people remember Jamal Wilson from 5-6 years ago. People remember what Anthony Davis looked like when he first showed up. Cole fits that moniker of coming in as a big guy, way too big guy, maybe 380 pounds when he committed to Kyle Flood. He's down to 315, 320 now. He looks great, and you can tell by the way he moves that he's really a transformed guy, and he wouldn't be in the offensive line conversation right now as a potential starter if he didn't change his body the way he did. I would definitely say he impressed the most in the offseason.
Yeah, it's great to hear. I mean, you have that physicality and that kind of size. It's something that obviously, you know, a team that's going to rely on the run, you can't have enough of those big guys. Now, you know, we talked about the running game, the wide receivers. Now, of course, the one player I think that you know, Tyler Kroft in the offense in what he was, the type of dynamic player, you know, there is a drop-off and there's no negative, you know, slight to the other tight ends there. But are there any clear front runner who, you know, the tight end will be in terms of, you know, it seemed like there was a couple guys who caught passes in the spring game. Is there any pecking order that's set there yet?
From my perspective, I would say no. I didn't think any tight end really stepped up to take the job in spring. But if you look at the way that Kyle Flood's spoken about the position and the fact that he gave Nick Archidiakono, you know, one of those spring awards for his mental and physical toughness, I would have to say that Archidiakono, the junior from Archbishop Wood, is, you know, your leader in the clubhouse. But you know what? What you're doing in April and May is great, but it's what you do in August that wins you playing time. So it's really any man's game.
Right. So I think that's definitely a position that's like you said, is going to go into the summer camp. Now, looking really, you know, at the rest of the offense, you know, Rutgers still one of the few programs that, you know, employs a fullback in its pro-style offense. So, you know, Michael Burton has gone from the program. Who seems to be the leader, and did anybody separate themselves in the spring?
When Sam Bergen decided to come back for a sixth year, I think it was pretty clear to everyone that he would be the starter to replace Michael Burton. He had a good spring. Bergen looks better than he did last year because fullback was still a struggle at him at times. Keep in mind that he's a converted linebacker, still learning things. But I would really say he's the starter. And then behind him, you've got guys like Kevin Marquez and Raison Gross, walk-ons that are working hard, trying to earn more playing time. Maybe they'll see a few reps, but to me, that's Sam Bergen's position.
Yeah, I mean, he's in for, this is his sixth season, I believe, at the Banks, right?
Yes, he makes us all feel a little old.
Now, you know, of course, I left the last discussion, you know, for, you know, the one that's probably the one that's highest in everybody's mind in the quarterback position. You know, I think it's one thing you have to be careful in looking at these spring games is, you know, assuming that it's a live, it is live, obviously, but it's you know, not necessarily the game type of scenario where, you know, you're going to get hit and you know you're going to get hit on these pass rushes and also the play calling could be very valuable. But, you know, what did you think about the quarterback play in terms of Laviano, who at least to the eye looked like he was confident and in charge, and then Hayden Reddy, you know, really having his first game experience in a very long time?
You know, neither one really impressed me that much this spring, but I'm pretty spoiled. I started with Rutgers, covering Rutgers right in Mike Teal's prime and carrying that through to Tom Savage, and then with what Gary Nova's done, he always did well in practice. So I'm pretty spoiled when it comes to watching a quarterback in practice. And these guys, you know, sometimes you got to keep in mind that they're still young. Neither one's ever really seen game experience. Laviano has a tiny bit, but not enough to make a difference. I didn't think either one made great decisions in the spring game or throughout the spring, but I thought both of them, you know, showed some physical tools. Chris Laviano's ahead right now. He can move a little bit more. That second touchdown throw to Agudosi was really impressive. The first one should have been intercepted. And Hayden Reddick didn't quite get the same opportunities. So it'll be interesting to see what they do for him going into training camp.
Yeah, and I think you bring a great point. Even with the first touchdown pass that, you know, it was a second, you know, team defense. And not only that, things change in your mind. If, let's say that pass is picked off, both in your confidence. And right, I mean, like, you know, Reddick's first possession was on a short field, so you know, it's really hard to say, evaluate, but, you know, I guess in terms of how he held himself and how he looked, I thought, you know, Laviano definitely looked like a player that was, you know, at least matured you know, looking like a quarterback. But, you know, you're right. I mean, over these last couple of weeks, they've been showing a lot of these replays on the Big Ten Network. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, they had the Maryland game, and some of the throws that Gary Nova were making in that game were just, you know, NFL-type throws. And I think we kind of do forget that while he had his struggles, he had some spectacular games. And you know, when you look at the schedule and they're finishing 8-5, it's, and with the quarterback play in some of those games, it's not easy to replace in this offseason. But definitely a battle that's going to continue to go into the summer, obviously. So let's, you know, move over to the defensive side of the ball. You know, wanted to get your opinion on some of the players that kind of jumped out, you know, in particularly, you know, we heard a lot about the cornerback position with Nader Barnwell being hurt. Anthony Schiappi was moved over to safety. You know, who seems to be the leader there? Dre Boggs, you know, I look like Darren Daly was playing well as well. You know, who are some of the guys that caught your eye in the cornerback?
Really, this is, it's going to sound a little bit like a cop-out, but all of them. I thought that I thought Darren Daly had a great spring. He was one of the best players all of spring, and he's really put himself in a position where Nadir Barnwell might have to worry about winning that playing time with how much he's missed. I thought Daly looked great. Boggs, there's still, you know, some concerns about his knee from last season, but he matched up with Leonte Carew a heck of a lot in the spring, and there's no way to get better than doing that. So the two of them I thought played well. I thought that Isaiah Wharton was pretty solid at corner, especially for a guy that a lot of people thought would end up at safety. Blesson Austin, the true freshman, you saw that fumble he forced in the spring game. That was a heck of a play. That was a spectacular play.
And you know, you mentioned that, but he, you know, throughout the camp was, seemed to be a guy that was always around the ball. I mean, I think in the first scrimmage, he also caused the fumble that Isaiah Johnson, the linebacker, returned for a touchdown. So, you know, some guys just have that ability to be around the ball and make plays.
Yeah, and Austin fits that. He's a former quarterback, so you know he's got pretty good size, pretty good smarts, and you can convert that into a corner that's, you know, 6'2", physical. He spent a year in prep school, so he's a little more grown up than your average freshman. He comes from Brooklyn. He's a tough kid. He talks a big game, and you always like that out of your cornerbacks. He's kind of the complete package as a recruit, but you know, you still got to be careful. Don't throw him into the fire too early and make sure that you teach him how to do things the right way before you ask too much of him.
Right, right. Now, of course, you know, moving over to the safety position, you know, a guy that everybody probably is always interested in talking about, you know, still seems he's currently running with the number two, but, you know, Kai Hester, that's the four-star safety that switched over to Rutgers from Miami. Now, he's right now a second team, but how do you see the battle for, I guess, both safety positions heading into summer?
Yeah, I would look at both as a battle. But to me, strong safety, I was a little disappointed in Kai Hester this spring. I thought that he would really just jump in and take, you know, that position, dominate that position. And, you know, that's kind of shame on me because it is a redshirt freshman, and sometimes you get lost in the hype a little bit of a kid coming in with that much attention. He's still got a lot of room to grow, and Davon Jacobs is a former linebacker, so he knows a bunch of different ways to approach that strong safety position. He learned from Lorenzo Waters. He's had his struggles, and at this point I would say he's ahead of Kai Hester, but both of them play. And I look at free safety, I think Delon Stevenson's going to keep that starting job that he shared with Jonathan Aiken last year, but Kyle Flood rewards big plays, and no one made a bigger play in the spring game than Anthony Chaffee at free safety.
And he definitely looks like he's beefed up, you know, now at over 200 pounds. So, you know, we all remember, you know, poor kid that was, you know, definitely at 170 pounds. And, you know, considering, you know, the competition that he had in his school, you know, as a guy who would normally have been redshirted, but because of the, you know, unprecedented amount of injuries and all kinds of other things that happened in that second year, that year was thrown into the fire 2 years. But, you know, he's a guy who looks, like you said, a ball-hawking type of safety that really, at the very least, is going to be in there as your fifth guy. And that could turn out to be a really good position change for Rutgers.
Yeah, I like that position change a lot. We didn't see many of them this spring, but that one made a heck of a lot of sense to me. Anthony Chaffee, he's not the best athlete on the field. He's not the most technically sound guy, but you go back and you chart the big plays or the times that he's around the football over the last 2 years, and he's right at the top of the list.
Now, of course, you know, this is the Big Ten, so the physicality and the bruising that goes on and against these running games that we saw last year, and you know, Rutgers had a rough go at it. You know, facing the Wisconsins, you know, Indiana even, that, you know, all these big games. And so the defensive line and linebacker position, you know, I guess the one major injury that they had was with Taylor being knocked out. But, you know, it seemed, you know, you mentioned Gauss, obviously you have Longa, Johnson coming in. You know, how do you see the linebacker position shaking out in terms of the depth at that position?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Gus and Long are both pretty much locked into their positions by now. And Isaiah Johnson did what he needed to this spring. He came in ready, good find by Bob Frazier when he's out at California recruiting someone else. And, you know, you got Kywan Lewis coming in to battle with Isaiah Johnson for that middle linebacker spot. And you know, I think it's pretty clear those are your top four linebackers rotating around, and that might be all Rutgers needs this year is those four guys.
Yeah, of course, Lewis is the fifth-year transfer coming over from South Carolina. And, you know, Rutgers has done well with those fifth-year transfers, starting with R.J. Bill. You know, you had the cornerback Lewis Toler, and last year in the wide receiver, he's in my mind now, but he had a couple
Terzilli.
Big plays. So Terzilli, that's right. So we'll see how that fits in. So then, of course, defensive line, you know, Hamilton sat out the game, probably more precaution, don't want to get your star hurt there. But they are replacing Kirksey. So, you know, the rotation there, you know, I think some people might hope to have seen a little bit more out of Sebastian Joseph this offseason. But how do you see that obviously shaking out? And then, of course, you know, we're all interested to see how Kamoko Kure continues to, you know, it just grow into being a full every down player.
Yeah, I mean, we could list every defensive lineman because you know they're going to play about 10 guys this season. But to me, I really look at the nose tackle position. That's my biggest concern, my biggest question. You mentioned Sebastian Joseph, who, may, you know, hasn't come along as quickly as many have hoped. He's injured again, which is a concern, so he'll probably be out for a while. Now you have this redshirt freshman, Kevin Wilkins, who's a heck of a player, but he's never played before, and he's an offensive lineman by trade. And then behind him, you got Quanzel Lambert, who's a 260-pound nose tackle. So to me, the three-tech is fine. The R position and the defensive end position that Rutgers uses, they're both fine. They've got some good depth. But that nose tackle, man, that is a big concern.
Yeah, I mean, of course, I know we cringe when we, you know, kind of hear that size. I mean, those are things that worked in the past, you know, using, you know, the smaller defensive guys. You know, of course, Foster, you think about, you know, Erin Brand, but, you know, and this is the Big Ten, folks. So, yeah, hopefully, as you mentioned, that Joseph does step up in there. So I guess rounding out, you know, You're at the practices and, you know, we really don't get to see much in terms of the spring game, even though they had a fun little contest in that punt contest. but special teams, you know, didn't sound too great in terms of the kicking game and really anyone taking control of the punting job. You know, any notes to add in there?
Yeah, you know, I watched, you know, I was at every practice, all 15 of them, and I would say special teams really – is what it was last year. It's really no better or worse. You've got a long snapper that was brought in on scholarship that, you know, he got it done last year, but that was with a big assist by Mike Bamonte. He really needs to show some improvement in Alan Lucy. That's what I'm talking about. And then you look at the kicking game, and Kyle Federico's a career, you know, 65-70% kicker, and that's what he's going to be this season. And at punter, you've got Joey Roth, who's got a stronger leg, but it takes him a while to get rid of the ball. And you got Tim Gleason, who's pretty good at trapping you inside the 20. I really think that fans are going to see what they saw last year on special teams when you're talking about the kicking game.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that, you know, it's such an important part of the game, of course. And, you know, Rutgers has done well in terms of blocks and things like that. But, you know, you really cannot give away field position and things of that nature. But, you know, another in a couple of months we'll be out here evaluating again. So, you know, it's obviously a good, valuable practice opportunity for a lot of the guys there, and for the most part, not many injuries. So I think in that sense, I probably really everybody probably is happy about the spring turnout and show.
Yeah, not too many bad injuries. And you know what? They made the top, I think, top 20 in overall spring game attendance. So those are two pretty big wins for the program right there.
Cool. Well, Sam, I know you got to hop, and I appreciate you coming on to the show. And I definitely look forward to getting you on again in the future.
Yep, thanks, Jerry. And just for those listening, you can find my stuff at Rutgers.scout.com. We cover every practice. We cover recruiting, and feel free to check us out.
All right, well, thanks again. We'll talk again in the future.
Definitely. Thanks, Jerry.
Well, thanks to Sam for coming on to the show and, you know, kind of take a little second here before we move on to the next phase of the show. For those listening to the first time, this is the Our Big Show, a podcast that has kind of transformed over the years. I started out doing this with another colleague, Pete Zonsky. We were doing, at the time, of course, Big East football, and, you know, did a little focus on really the Northeast team, as Pete was a Connecticut guy, and, you know, we did our focus on Rutgers in Connecticut, but, you know, went through the Big Ten transformation and I kind of had the show as during that AAC year where, you know, where we looked at Rutgers, you know, some of the AAC, and then kind of started looking forward to talking to some our future opponents and guys from the Big Ten. And now last year transitioned to, you know, kind of doing half of the show Rutgers, the second half, talking about the other Big Ten programs, and then do my best usually to try to get guys from some of the other programs that are not as easily or followed as often. I mean, it's always easy to get guys from Michigan and Ohio State and Penn State, even Nebraska, because there's tons of fans. But, you know, there's other schools like Indiana and you know, Northwestern that have followings, and always try to do a good job of getting those guys on to talk, and you know, obviously Maryland as well. You know, and I think, you know, you learn through some of those struggles for those that are, you know, as Rutgers tries to weave its way through the middle half of this conference and hopefully move up in it. But, you know, just a couple of notes on what I saw in terms of the spring practice, whether it's, you know, the spring game and just reading what's going on. And, you know, one thing, you know, we talk a lot about the recruiting, and it's always a big talking point with Rutgers in getting them the New Jersey players and the top New Jersey players. When, for instance, you have a year like what's coming up where, you know, there's three national recruits coming out of New Jersey, those are the kind of guys that come in and give you the star power that can compete with the Ohio States, maybe, or, you know, obviously the Michigan States, and they do have to lock down those guys. But, you know, one thing from looking at these practice notes and these, you know, in the spring game, it seemed like Rutgers does have a lot more depth than it did have in the past. You know, I talked about, you know, five wide receivers that can, you know, a group of wide receivers that can at least compare to some of the other groups that Rutgers had in the past. So, you know, obviously when they, a couple of years ago, when they had Coleman and Harrison and Wright, and before that, you know, Britt and Underwood and Tim Brown, you know, there's five guys that can play. And I think that's something to keep, you know, an eye on. You know, obviously after Ray Rice left, you know, there were some inconsistencies on the offensive line, but no real dynamic running backs. You know, DeJuan Jameson put together a good year before going pro. But, you know, when you look at the fact that Hicks and Martin are freshmen, and James, when he's on the field, is a dynamic player. You know, again, I mentioned in Boone and Peoples who can do things. There's a lot of depth on this team. You know, does it need more depth on the defensive line and size? Of course, but you know, we see in these position battles, as Sam mentioned, you know, a couple of guys that jumped out on him at cornerback, you know, quite a few guys did. So it's something to say for the quality of the roster, that in what Kyle Flood has been able to do with his recruiting is, you know, maybe they've struck out on some of the big home run guys. And I think if you watch that spring game, you know, I remember a couple of years back when I saw Mohamed Sanu in his first spring game, and he had just switched over to wide receiver, and I looked at this guy, and he just jumped out at you, like, and his athleticism, and he just looked like an NFL player. You know, not as many, of course, there's guys like Torrey and, you know, Hamilton didn't play, guys that jump out at you in terms of the freak athletic ability that will, when you go in against an Ohio State, and be able to compete. But from top to bottom, it seems like there definitely is a lot more depth on this team. And, you know, where does that translate? I think that translates in the record that they had last year. If you look at Rutgers' record, you know, obviously 8-5, you know, there was six games that you say, you know, they played teams that they were better than. I'm putting Michigan in that category. And then you probably had three games where they probably were equal to the other teams. Even though personally, I think North Carolina goes in the box of teams that Rutgers was better than, but because of perception, Rutgers was underdog in that game, but Rutgers was a better team. But let's say North Carolina, Penn State, Maryland are teams that they were even with. And they went 2-1 in those games, and, you know, they should have pulled out the Penn State game. You know, at the end of the day, going 8-1 against the teams that you are better than or equal to, you have to give some credit to the coaching staff there. Now, of course, this year they lose Ralph Friedman in the offseason, and that is something that may be an issue. You know, he was potentially a difference maker, but I think he was also more of a difference maker to Gary Nova. So, you know, that is something that it still, to me, looks at the staff is doing a good job of getting these guys ready. Now, the games that they were playing against teams that were better and much better, they were 0-4 and very ugly losses, of course, in Ohio State, Michigan State, Nebraska, and Wisconsin. So that's where they are as a program. Now, when you're replacing a Gary Nova, as I said, if you go back and look at that Maryland game, obviously he threw for over 400 yards against Michigan, you know, it's not going to be easy to replace those guys, to place him, his production, I should say, sorry, a senior quarterback. So does that mean that some of these games that you would put in that bucket as teams that they're better than may not really be there? That could be so. So duplicating last year's record of 8-5 is not going to be easy. But going forward, the key is to take that 0-4 bucket and turn that into competitive games and then eventually start winning them. Now, that's where you turn to recruiting, and that's where you turn to getting the top players, keeping the top players in the state, getting some of these star players. I mean, when you look at a Rashawn Gary, a 300-pound defensive lineman, you know, a guy like that has NFL potential all over him. Those are the guys that you need, and those are the guys that you need to compete with in those other programs that are at the top tier of the league. But right now it's still an interesting sell that they have. You know, I think what is going on is Rutgers, what it sells. You know, what is it selling? What is it selling to recruits? You know, before it was when they started to do well, it was, you know, we get guys in the NFL. So, you know, coaches would say, well, you want to go to the NFL, come to my school. You know, we have X amount. Rutgers did a good job of selling that. You know, they have the Knights in the NFL. Quite frankly, that's how I started getting involved in podcasting and blogging, was keeping track of Rutgers players in the NFL. And it grew from 5 to 10 to as much as 25. And now, you know, you can tell kids, well, you know, look at, you know, Devin McCourty, look at, you know, Jason McCourty, look at these guys in the NFL. You come here, you can play in the NFL. So that takes away that excuse. The next thing was playing in the Big East and then playing in the AAC. Now you're playing in the Big Ten. Potentially Rutgers is playing in the toughest division of college football, at least considered possibly the second toughest division. When you look at what's going to happen over the next 2 years with Urban Meyer and Ohio State, Jim Harbaugh is going to get Michigan back. You have Penn State on the upswing. You know, you obviously have Michigan State. I mean, it's a division that's, you know, as I said, probably only exceeded by, you know, the SEC and the SEC West. But the sell then becomes, well, come to Rutgers because you can play against the best. And if you want to be the best, you play against the best. So the only thing I think that's left really for Rutgers is obviously winning on the field and just dealing with the fact that there are going to be kids who want to get out of the state. And I think that's just, you know, maybe what we saw in Garrett Tannehill, the quarterback who chose Tennessee over Rutgers. And, you know, not to say that Tennessee is not a place that you would want to go, but it's it's Ohio, not Ohio State. It's not, you know, you're losing to Michigan or you're losing to Alabama. You know, the bottom line, I think they're just players that want to lead the state, and that may have been the case there. But what Rutgers needs to do, you know, last season getting shut out in the top 12, 15 of its own state, that can't happen. You're going to continue to lose top players to other schools, and that's because players have options. And they are schools that will sell the fact that it has a football culture, and you get to leave home and go away to play in places like Texas and Alabama and, you know, Michigan, where there's 100,000 fans, and you will lose kids there. That's fine. But what they need to do is grab the next group of the top five, the top 10 in New Jersey, and keep them from going to, I don't know, let's say Michigan State or going to Wisconsin or, you know, going to Penn State. I mean, for a while, you know, Shiano was able to keep Penn State away from a lot of the top players. I mean, first it was keeping Pittsburgh away, keeping Syracuse away. So that's the part, that's the challenge that Rutgers has. And it also has a challenge of going after the top players in the state while still going after the next level of guys. So, you know, how much, you know, the quote-unquote show the love to certain players while making sure you also stay in with the player behind him. If that player, top player, picks another place, that you're still in a good position to go and pick another guy as well. So I think that's where Rutgers is at this point. But what we want to do now, see, take a kind of look at the recruiting side of things and where they are in this junior class, which is junior to be, going in for their senior class, you know, the 2000, and it's crazy to say, but the signing class for 2016, which is where Rutgers is, all college football is focusing on at this time. So looking forward. Now, at this time, I definitely want to, you know, give a chance to anyone who would like to call in. If you want to call in, the number is 914-338-1694, and that's 914-338-1694. And by the way, if you want to tweet or send me anything, and I'll, you know, try to answer on the show, the number, my Twitter handle is RUFanJerry, and you can send me actually a tweet right now, and, you know, get to it as well. So in a little while, we are going to get to talking over to recruiting, but one last thing I wanted to take a look at was in terms of the NFL draft. This year, Rutgers is potentially a little bit light on that end. Of course, talked a little bit about the loss of Tyler Croft. We've been hearing a lot of good things about him, and it seems like it's always difficult to tell when you're hearing from anonymous scouts, because are they giving you information to not pump up a guy too much, or they, you know, what they may find as a gem, they're not going to talk up a guy too much. So, but Kropp seems to have some of that ability as a tweener type of tight end that can go in as a receiver and you know, potentially, you know, be play in some of the more dynamic offenses in the NFL that utilize a pass receiving tight end. So he's a guy. Of course, we also have in terms of interest, you know, Gary Nova. I don't see him getting drafted, but I definitely see him as someone who will be taken in a camp and given a shot. I mean, as Sam mentioned from practice, he's a guy who makes all those throws in practice, and he did well at his Rutgers day. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a team give him a shot, albeit, you know, at least coming in as an undrafted free agent that will get a chance to you know, throw the ball around in the spring. But additionally, there's also Caleb Johnson, the guard who started for 4 years at Rutgers. It's always difficult to tell with guards and centers where they go in the draft, but it's a possibility that he gets taken. You know, it could be a third day guy, someone that gets picked up a little bit later in the draft. And then, you know, another interesting player is Michael Burton. Now, I don't see him being drafted per se. Fullbacks, again, as we mentioned, you know, very few teams at the college level employ the tight, you know, fullback position. So to expect him to be drafted, I doubt it. But in terms of, you know, definitely being a guy that will get into a camp, you know, by teams that use a tight end, a fullback or an H-back type of player, he's a guy that may, you know, get a shot. So I see that. And what's interesting is because you're now starting to see a little bit of some of the fallback of a little fall off that you're seeing in the recruiting starting to take place now on the NFL draft day, right? I mean, 2012, in terms of all the defensive guys that were drafted, you know, you just look back and say, wow, that was a tremendous defense. So last year, you know, kind of a quiet draft, and then again, you know, this year. So you definitely, as I mentioned, kind of see that fall off with the quality of player that you know, Rutgers has had. And but not saying they don't have the talent, but it's not in the NFL type of players that we've been used to over the last couple of years. And I think some of that is the confines of what Greg Schiano used to be able to do and go in and steal a couple of top five players and then coach up particularly defensive backs, which were his specialty. Whereas Kyle Flood and his staff are doing a good job of identifying players across the board and providing more depth. But, you know, obviously have been shut out of the top players in the state and top players on their board, if you may be, for the last couple of years. So, you know, that's kind of showing up in the draft segment of it. But what we're going to do here is just take a quick little break, and then I'm going to get right back on, and then we're going to talk a little bit more. Anyway, I'm back. This is you fan Jerry. Welcome back to our big show. Sorry to step away right over there. But, again, let me give you the number if anyone wants to call in. I still have another 26 minutes of show of airtime. The number is 914-338-1694. And I want to welcome, I actually have a caller here. Welcome to the our big show. Who am I speaking with?
How you doing, Jerry? This is Hugo.
Hugo, how you doing? A good friend of mine and a longtime listener to the podcast. Thanks for calling in. So let me ask you, were you at the spring game on this Friday?
No, I was actually sick under the weather, so unfortunately I couldn't make it, but I heard that it was a great event. I watched it. I DVR'd it, so I got a chance to see it, and it looked really good. I think adding the ex-players to the show, to the segment, and interviewing them, even having Harry Swain there, added an extra touch, which I thought was great. And I'm hoping that we get some commits because of it. So hoping for something in the next month. But it is a long season. It's still early. It's only April. And I think all of us fans are chomping at the bit, you know, hoping for the next recruit to commit. But, you know, you still have the summer and you still have the fall and you still have the signing period of February.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a, you know, like they say, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint with becoming the recruiting game. And, you know, we talked about Garantano being kind of like, you know, a headline name that they missed out on. You know, personally, I still think he was a player that really was never inclined to coming. But, you know, with him off the board, it kind of brings the attention to Dwayne Haskins, who, you know, some may actually consider potentially more upside in his recruitment. And of course, you know, for those who know, he's a guy who grew up in New Jersey. He's a Maryland guy now, but, you know, still has, you know, put Rutgers in his top and has been very close to the program with current recruit Muhammad Jabi and, of course, relationship with Muhammad Sanu. So, you know, he's a guy that could be that catalyst that, you know, fans seem to be and everyone looking for someone to take leadership and say, you know, I'm going to be the guy that's going to, you know, commit to this class early. And,
you know, I guess, you know, you'll probably agree that, you know, that kind of commitment would lead to potentially some momentum in the recruiting of the other players in the state.
Yeah, I think so. I think based on, you know, what I've read and stuff, I'm no recruit expert, but from what they say, you know, the quarterback is always the biggest domino, and once you get him to commit, you know, the wide receivers sometimes fall in line because they want to play with that quarterback, and then you get some other guys that want to follow the leader, so to speak, because, you know, for all intents and purposes, you know, quarterbacks are the leaders of the offense and sometimes the team. So it'd be great to get a kid like that. You know, I think Savage was a four-star quarterback, and it'd be nice to get a guy like that on board, but we'll see. I think he's supposed to be in the area, and as long as we keep a relationship with him, hopefully he comes this way. If not, then, you know, we got to keep moving. And actually, I was going to ask you, I don't know what you think, but, you know, there's a lot of hoopla and hype around this whole 2016 recruiting class, and, you know, if Flood doesn't seem to land a lot of the big fish, but we still have a decent recruiting class, does that, you know, kind of go away, or do we just keep winning and keep building for the following years?
Well, I think you definitely bring up a good point, because they're heading to the interesting time of, you know, they have to continue to do well on the field, and they did well last year, you know, obviously going 8-5, but you had the benefit of, you know, most of the nation and the perception and the people who put together, you know, I think Vegas had 4 wins. You know, that's because, you know, Rutgers is still Rutgers, and it just, this perception game takes a long time to you know, to do
and
away
I think,
with that.
And I think that's the thing, is that because you have all these commits there, they all seem to love Flood. They all love the program. They all seem to be excited. You know, it gets the fan base excited based on, you know, that perception, but you don't see a commit. So it's like, it's kind of nail biting.
Yeah, it's tough. It's the old chicken and egg, I think, you know, conversation of, you know, guys want to see them win and then they'll come. But then how do you win without them coming? And, you know, I always, you know, kind of sit back and think of this when you put yourself in the shoe of a player and, you know, you're this top recruit who has guys calling you from all over the nation, and are you going to be that one guy that say, you know, I'm going to go to Rutgers, you know, they may not, you know, compete for a national title, but I want to stay at home, you know, where the other guy's telling you, like, you know, hey, you know, we're in the SEC, and, you know, we're Ohio State, like, you know, so it's just, it's hard, and I think there's 2 issues, you know, going. One is that, you know, some of these top players have so many options that it's hard to not fall to that. I mean, not fall, I shouldn't say fall, is not to choose those, you know, people. And then there's just what I call the kind of nature of New Jersey. It is what it is. It's a small state in terms of the size of it, and kids, it's very densely populated. And I think there's just people who just want to get away. And that's no different than any other student, actually. You know, how many students and top students leave the state to go to all these neighboring universities? And I think that's something that happens where, you know, some of these kids just want to get out of New Jersey and, you know, going to the middle of Pennsylvania and going to, you know, Michigan, Ohio State, it's just something different and something that they want to do.
No, that's legitimate. You know, that's a legitimate point. But at the same time, you see the pride in other programs like at Michigan, Ohio. And don't get me wrong, they have hundreds of years, you know, of legacy of programs. So you can't compare, you know, the small winning tradition that we've had compared to them, right? And 100 years. So maybe that's what it is. You know, it just takes time, and there's no shortcuts, right? So it's just going to take us as a fan base. We've got to be, you know, but then you have some fan, part of the fan base that says, well, how patient should we be? They think that, you know, having a particular coach or a particular recruiting style is going to change things overnight, right?
It's tough. And I think you bring up a good point in terms of recruiting. I mean, what's going to happen on this field is this year is going to be important, right? Because, you know, like I was just saying, it's, you know,
it's not going to be easy just to replicate it in five. Like that's and that will be not a a reflection of a poor coaching job. It's just that it was, things went, the right way to win those games. You know, like I mentioned, those Michigan games, those games that, now you got Harbaugh on the sidelines this year when you're playing Michigan. You know, Rutgers may have the same talent as them this year, but you got a guy that can coach and you know, do you win that game? And you don't have Gary Nova throwing for 400 yards, Then you got Maryland who, maybe they won't blow the lead this year. So let's say Rutgers goes 6-6 or, then if Flood doesn't close out on this class, and what I mean by closing out, they cannot get shut out in the top 15 of their own state. And if he again gets in that situation and you're 6-6, and then I think yes, it would become time to look at another coaching change. But if he goes 6-6 and he pulls in, doesn't pull in obviously the top guys, but if he pulls in guys from that top 5 to top 10, which makes his recruiting class better than last year, it becomes difficult in terms of doing that. And I think we all have this vision that if there was a big name guy that comes in and would just wow people over, Rutgers will bring some of these top players and have them stay. But who is that guy? I don't know. It's not easy to say.
Yeah, I don't know either. And so that's why I hope for Flood to succeed. If he wins, and let's say we don't get any of the bigger names early on, they go somewhere else or they're holding off. To your point, we win again. We prove that we get 8 wins again, or 7 wins and in a bowl game. And then, come February, those guys might decide, I'm having second thoughts. Maybe the grass wasn't greener on the other side. Maybe I should be, looking at Rutgers. Maybe I should be going back there because I really like it there. Look, they're proving that they can win 2 years in a row.
Yeah, no, it's true. Yeah, the one concern I have, like I was saying, is where I was actually I was impressed with what I think is the depth of this team, and I think a lot of that does go to the table to the ability to identify talent on the staff. But
quarterback
the bottom line
concerns
is,
you, though, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, not only quarterback, but just, you can only, we talk about stars and boards, and of course it's a popular topic on the boards, right, where, X amount of two-star players make it to the NFL. But at the end of the day, the bottom line is, play the percentages. If, we look at a Florida State, they just pull in tons of four-star guys. So let's say one of them doesn't pan out. We'll put in the next guy, right?
Yeah.
You need those top guys. It's no secret that who are some of the best players that we have going into the year. Darius Hamilton, Leonte Carew, those are four-star guys. Those are guys who probably may play at the next level. So you have to pull in those guys. Otherwise, what happens is what we saw against Ohio State and Michigan State, and that's those pummelings, I think, make it hard to sell. Like, and that's because the kids, when they go to a program, they want to be in these big games. So, the sell becomes easier to the opposing coaches. Do you really want to go through that? Like, sure, you can go 8-5 in the quick lane bowl, but, when you play Michigan State, you want to lose 40-5, to 7. So I think that's the hardest part. And you can't compete against those teams unless you have those players. So I don't know. I think you almost need that dream team idea that people were saying where you can get you don't need all you don't need Rashawn Gary and Kareem Walker and Garantano, but to get at least 5-6 core guys and say let's do it, and that's what Flood has to find a way of doing.
Those 4-star guys, like you said, because the 2 and 3 stars are great. Michigan State does it, right? That's an example, but you need them to continue. They take a little longer to develop.
Yes, right. And that's another point, too, talking about Michigan State, is that, I had Hondo Carpenter a couple early in the last year, and it's almost just part of the program that they just tell the guys, look, you're not playing freshman year. Very rarely does a guy come in there and play. And that just allows for the maturation process of, you're playing a 21-year-old guy in his junior year, and a guy that's been in the program 4 years. I mean, it makes a difference. Like you said, it takes some of these guys more time to develop. And You know, that's where the quarterback position, I actually would be excited for Rutgers to land like a Haskins and maybe not be in a position to, you know, I think deep down is why a lot of people are rooting for, not, you know, saying that there's anybody has an interest, but, you know, the hope is that Reddy will come in and take it, you know, the position by pull by the horns and hold it down so that you get a new quarterback that can actually sit and develop for 2 years, you know, kind of like Mike Teal did, instead of keep throwing in young guys and go through that cycle of, playing as a freshman, you know, developing as a sophomore, and then finally, you know, like the Gary Nover, you know, imagine if you had him one more year.
Right.
But it's not an easy sell. But, you know, quick question I have for you, though, you know, going back, you know, you didn't make it out to the game. I actually, same thing, did not make it out to the game. But, you know, I saw the punt contest that they did, and I thought that was a great thing about getting the NFL players back. And, you know, I have a buddy of mine that's a Florida State fan, always gives me, stuff about Rutgers. But, you know, you even admit that the selling point of all these players that got into the NFL, it's a good sell, because at least it tells these guys that, you know, you can go move on. But what would you like to see in terms of even the marketing or some ideas that you think the program can do better in selling itself?
I wasn't a marketing major, but I think, social media is front and center these days. And I do see that, you know, Twitter hashtags are used, but, you know, if there are stories that are out there that the program wants to put out, they should put them out on social media. They should get all that stuff out there as much as possible. The use of Twitter, right? The use of Instagram, anything. I know that they're using it, but I don't know if, you know, they recently lost two members in their group, right, for, I think, in the football division. And I don't know if they've backfilled them yet, but once they do, you know, they've got to be really good at utilizing our social media and creating content. So that stuff needs to get out there, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, and it just helps in terms of building the program, and it's a long process in terms of the perception, but, you know.
And how about continuing the pipeline into Florida or into New York? I like what they've done with our vision. I like what they've done with the videos that they threw out there on YouTube. You know, I don't know if there are more billboards this year, but I've always liked the billboards and the ads across the Big Ten. I don't know what more they can do.
Yeah, no, I think they're doing a good job in terms of the and even the fan experience. I know the, you know, supply and demand. So, you know, we look at it this year. Obviously, Ohio State game will be sold out. You know, you have games. You know, there's a lot of local alumni for these schools. And then what happens is games like Michigan State, Ohio State, Nebraska, those become hard tickets. So people will hear about everybody going there, having a good time, and then it makes the games like, you know, obviously Kansas is homecoming this year. It makes some of those other games that normally you would have a harder time selling become more valuable because it becomes attainable to go to those games. So I think that helps. Of course, they have to put together, you know, a good product on the field. But I think, you know, they're doing, you know, the best they can do. They're getting these kids on the campus early and often. And I think that's another thing. You know, you start now, you know, kids growing up from peewees or, you know that Rutgers is a, you know, viable program. And more importantly, I think also to get the families of the players around the program. Believe it or not, obviously it's the family. But, you know, when these kids are growing up, you know, there's a lot of people around them, and you know, they're like, oh, you know, you're going to grow up and play Ohio State, you know, and that just beats in your head too. And you know, the more you can get people becoming fans, the more people are like, well, you know, that'd be cool to see you play at Rutgers, you know, against Michigan. So I think that part of the sell, unfortunately, takes time. But, you know, one thing you mentioned about Kyle Flood and everybody likes him, and you say, you know, a lot of recruits come. Do you think that maybe Rutgers needs to get a little more, you know, dirty in the recruiting game? I'm not talking about dirty SEC style, but I'm talking about, you know.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't know. You know, roll up your sleeves. I mean, nice guys finish last sometimes. I don't know. So maybe no one's saying, you know, you've got to throw money around and stuff like that. But, you know, obviously, you know, sometimes coaching
negativity or you throw that out with I mean, it's a great point. I mean, it's pretty absurd that, you know, I'm sorry, you know, Jim Harbaugh comes back to college and the first guy, you know, that they take to be their recruiting coordinator is a high school coach from New Jersey who happens to be the high school coach of the number one defensive tackle in the country.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, it's some of the other things where I love the families, it's great. And I think it's a great sell because you have to be consistent with that in order for it to sell for the family. But I think there's some times where you have to say, you know, and I know Garantano's an interesting story because the father player left her, so you never want to alienate him. But, you know, once it became apparent that he wasn't going in, you're going to do this whole Times Square thing is, you know, kind of do like Urban Meyer did, where, you know, he obviously made the phone call early in the morning, and then they said next, and they, you know, extended an offer to someone else. At that point, everybody knew he wasn't going to Ohio State. You know, I think that was a situation where Rutgers should have not let itself get played, you know, and you know, I'm not saying that they're raised or, you know, maybe publicly offer another quarterback, which would have made it apparent that, you know, oh, he's not going there. You know, little things like that that say, you know, that's fine, but don't, you know, you don't have to pick us, but don't put on a show when you really aren't going to intend on going to the program.
Yeah, but it seems as though that was his nature, you know, so that was going to happen based on his social media exposure. You know, it seemed like that was it was in his nature to do something like that. There really wasn't anything you could do about it. But, you know, at the end of the day, like you said, it's a marathon. So you never know what's going to happen, you know, seven months or however many months from now. Who knows? Maybe he's back in play. You never know. These things. Right, we all know recruiting is crazy. It's a crazy game, and you know anything can happen between now and February.
Definitely true. Well, Hugo, it was good talking to you, man. Appreciate you coming on. We got to get you on maybe again in the future, man.
Yeah,
good talking to you. Appreciate it.
I calling in. All right, thanks, Jerry. Bye.
All right, thanks. Well, thanks. I got to make sure I do a good job of getting that number out for. For anyone else who wants to call in, the 914-238 and 16, what's the last four, two digits here, 1694. So anyway, what we're going to do is going to wrap up this show again, kind of keeping it quiet in the off season. I will try to get something out. Sorry, wasn't able to get Mike on. We'll get him on, talk some recruiting in the future. And I know it's pretty crazy on the NFL draft side of it. So, you know, maybe do a little something with Rick in the future, see how it shakes out. So good luck to the Rutgers guys who are potentially going to, experience a culmination of their dreams, whether they get drafted or not. You know, within the next week, usually guys get signed. So, you know, good luck to those guys out there. Well, good luck to all the players, obviously, because, you know, it's an amazing feat. But we'll definitely get another show on in a couple of weeks and talk some 2016 recruiting. But again, thanks for everyone for listening. This is RU Fan Jerry, and you can catch me on Twitter at RU Fan Jerry. Thanks.